He would be sleeping in his manata, with an extended family all around. Perhaps he thought that I was desperately poor, having no cattle, just a small jeep. The Maasai use a specific derogatory term to describe such a person. Dorobo. I was a dorobo, a person with no cattle and thus minimal status. This young lad tended an entire herd. Perhaps he thought I was lost. He certainly knew where he was. He may have viewed me as the most unclean creature he had encountered. Maybe in his mind I was all of the above. Sitting in the dirt, with the air caressing my nasty feet, I looked to the last streaks of light on the horizon. It would soon be cool enough for a sweater, and I shivered in anticipation. I looked at my boots and decided to leave them outside the tent. I padded gingerly, barefoot, to the lip of the crater. I peered into the enveloping night. I wondered about mankind and my place. I had studied the liberal arts in college. I had read scores of books on anthropology and sociology, especially related to traditional societies. I had run complex espionage operations for several years, engaged with various people from various cultures. Many teachers and mentors had helped educate me. Perhaps, however, one of my best teachers was this near-naked boy. In the future, whether engaged with illiterate Afghan warlords or European technocrats, I would listen to my indigenous interlocutors with a larger degree of patience and respect. I would sometimes chide myself for not keeping an open mind, remembering how my cultural perspective could blind me to the obvious, as it had during that beautiful primordial evening in the Rift Valley. Intelligence collectors and analysts without empathetic intuition or deep intelligence can yield deeply flawed conclusions, bungled operations, and catastrophic policy decisions. In contrast, by understanding local norms in a human intelligence context and by working to build common policy purpose with local partners, risks diminish and rewards grow. Self-awareness through self-examination is essential for a successful intelligence officer, especially a recruiter. Without a solid central reference point of yourself, every other assessment and judgment is skewed. In lectures to students studying intelligence, I have used a GPS analogy. When you land in a foreign venue, you set your GPS, which first determines your exact coordinates. Only then can you start mapping the surrounding area, and only then can you chart your course. The same applies to the case officer. If he does not know himself, how can he know others? How can he build a trusted relationship and know where to guide the relationship? The farm does not instill this self-awareness, just reveals and sharpens existing capabilities. The CIA screens applicants for these case officer traits acquired through a mix of genetics and environmental factors. Like athletes, good spies are born, developed, and trained. Genetics is by happenstance. Training is by the CIA. The development of a spy occurs along his or her life's course. This path is not preordained. The path of development is just as often as not a result of free will. The best recruiters, before joining the CIA, have pursued worthy challenges, hard and sometimes dangerous, to test and measure themselves in new environments and situations. The path is not preordained. The path of development is just as often as not a result of free will. The best recruiters, before joining the CIA, have pursued worthy challenges, hard and sometimes dangerous, to test and measure themselves in new environments and situations. They make errors, discover themselves, and grow. I spoke about this with James C. Langdon, who served as a member of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, PFIAB, from 2001 to 2005. The PFIAB covered a wide range of issues of interest to the President. All the members had high-level security clearances with vast access across the community. Not an intelligence officer, but rather a successful Washington attorney and keen strategist, James had the opportunity to study the intelligence community and its officers because of his PFIAB status. During his 4 years of service, he initiated a series of unstructured, informal discussions with scores of intelligence personnel to supplement the more formal PFIAB deliberations. As an authorized, unbiased, astute listener and observer, he acquired exceptional insight into the community. On several occasions during our discussions, James stressed that the most important point, the one heard most often from intelligence professionals, centered on the quality of officers. The question, what are the ideal experiences for the development of a top-flight intelligence officer? There was an overwhelming consensus, according to James, that whether in operations or analysis, the best officers were usually those who had accumulated a broad range of diverse and enlightening experiences prior to joining government service. These men and women developed more open, more empathetic views of others. With their accumulated perspectives, they could engage with a broader range of people. They could also recognize, question, and sometimes challenge the status quo. Their cultural and geopolitical sensory perception sprang from their own life experiences, from knowing themselves. But James noted, to his dismay, that at least prior to 9/11, many thought the CIA emphasized hiring officers with clean, blank slates, rather than those with unique backgrounds and on-the-edge experiences. It was much easier to admit a new officer who adhered to the status quo, who migrated from parents to college to employment, than an unconventional adventurer. Or worse, these prospective CIA officers had family members in Pakistan or China who posed security questions by virtue of their foreign status. The security issue embedded in convention, James learned, seemed to trump all other qualification issues. No wonder only a small percentage of CIA operations officers recruited the bulk of quality foreign agents. Those operations officers who best understood themselves, their own motivations, their own ignorance, while exploring the ideologies, faults, anger, fears, hopes, and aspirations of others, are the ones who recruit the best spies. Those who realize what they don't know acquire the best intelligence. This is key. If an intelligence officer does not appreciate his own lack of knowledge, how can he know the gaps that need filling? If he does not look and listen with an open mind, and if he does not have a broad array of divergent experiences, how can he recruit sources and collect intelligence? The recruitment of human sources replenishes the system. With no new, vetted sources, and with old sources clogging the information flow, the espionage heart beats more weakly, and the intelligence corpus suffers. The intelligence institution may seek to compensate, relying more on technology, analysis, management tools, or unending reorganization. But without espionage, all other elements of intelligence will be less, not more. Without quality espionage, the practitioners of statecraft, especially our leaders, will be poorly served. The officers who can recruit human sources are the most treasured, because so few can consistently accomplish this mission. Scarcity increases value, and the value of these officers will grow, given that the complexities of the geopolitical world will require more intelligence from all sources, but especially espionage. The recruitment cycle is repeated constantly. The case officer must work to validate and improve each recruitment at every opportunity, Nothing is static. Moreover, recruitment is a means to an end, the collection of intelligence, and sometimes the execution of covert action. The management of recruited foreign national agents requires dedication and skill. Some officers excel in this aspect of espionage, while others do not. Some great recruiters lose interest after a recruitment. Some great operational managers can never pull the recruitment trigger. The best are officers who can both recruit and manage agents and agent networks. The very best are those who can accomplish all those tasks and lead others to do the same. Chapter 4. Collecting. The essence of espionage is access. Alan Dulles, The Craft of Intelligence. We climbed several flights of stairs to the target apartment. It was after midnight, but